Hey guys, what would it be like if you could last 10 times longer when you're having sex?
We are going to teach you how to gain massive confidence as a lover, all without performance anxiety, gimmicks, or prescription.
This course is perfect for you if you've ever been mortified by a sexual encounter that ended way too early.
Or if you've ever avoided intimacy out of fear that you won't last as long as your lover desires. Or maybe you long to give your partner multiple orgasms but can't last long enough to make that a reality.
Well, good news, we've got your back, and it's in our course, Last 10 Times Longer. Go to sexreimagined.com/last-10x-longer.
And for all of our favorite listeners out there, we are giving you a discount, 20% off, y'all. Just put in podcast20, all caps, podcast20, to get your 20% off of this phenomenal course that you're going to want to review more than once.
We cannot wait to see you inside this course. Plus, don't forget, we always got tons of bonuses. See you there. It's your girl, Leah Piper, for the Sex Reimagined podcast with co-host Dr. Willa Brown.
Hey, y'all. Here today to interview the one and only Charna Cassell, who's an licensed marriage and family therapist and trauma-trained psychotherapist and sexuality coach who helps people heal and find pleasure in their bodies. And for over 2 decades, she has been a sex educator. She also worked at the as a clerk at the Good Vibrations in San Francisco and is a master somatic coach, body worker. And so anyway, she was just so much fun to interview and we learned so much and just really had a great time with her.
This is a great episode. If you have had a sexual abuse history, if you know of someone who's had sexual trauma, and how to learn like the intricacies of that, how to be there for that, how to show up in a powerful way with loving compassion. And even if that is not a part of your world, the people or yourself having had sexual trauma, there's a lot of great information on boundaries that you're going to want to stay tuned in for.
Absolutely.
So, you are a friend of the show, then honey bunny, you know what to do. It is time to
tune in, turn on, and fall in love with Charna Cassell.
Love, love, love.
Welcome to the Sex Reimagined podcast, where sex is shame-free and pleasure forward. Let's get into the show.
Here we are with Charna Cassell. We're so excited to be here with you. Charna, tell us a little bit about how you got on this journey of healing, working with people around trauma, especially around sexual trauma, because from what I was looking into, you certainly have been on a journey. So we'd love to hear your genesis.
Yeah, what's the
story?
Genesis?
You. Thank you. All I can picture now is Phil Collins. I don't know if anyone listening is young enough to get that or old enough to get that. My own healing. My own healing from sexual trauma and developmental trauma. I was living in Northampton, Massachusetts. I had a girlfriend who owned a bookstore, and in that bookstore, I came across The Survivor's Guide to Sex by Stacey Haynes. And then I bought it and I promptly moved to San Francisco. And my big plan was to teach English as a foreign language in, and travel. And I got a job at Good Vibrations. And so long story short, so Good Vibrations is a worker-owned sex toy store. It used to be a co-op. And so Stacey used to work there. And through a series of synchronicities, I met a woman who became my best friend who happened to be in a survivors group with Stacey. And Stacey was her individual therapist. And so we were sitting over coffee and she was talking about her therapist, Stacey, and I'm like, wait a second. And I reached down, I picked up this book. I'm like, this, Stacey. And so it felt pretty destined. So I ended up, there's one spot in her group, one spot in her private practice. And that introduced me to somatic therapy, which I didn't understand. And we would do these weird exercises that I then later understood to be rewiring the brain through the body. That originated in Aikido, taught to her by Richard Strozzi Heckler. And so Stacey Haynes, her work focused more on trauma and social justice, and his work focused more on embodied leadership. And when she was leaving her private practice to go teach at Strozzi, I just didn't want to stop working with her. So I followed her. It was very much an intuitive process of, when I started working with her, I did not feel safe in my body. I did not understand how sex and intimacy could coexist. I had the habit of intensely freezing and going nonverbal. And through working with her and through working at this, doing an intensive training at the Strozzi Institute, I felt safe in my body. I had compassion for men and could feel safe in relation to them, and even started having, I identified as a lesbian until my late 20s, and then started dating and having sex with men. And because that work, because I was in therapy since I was 14, and talk therapy is great for, as a very insightful teenager, moving on, onward. But it didn't do anything for my nervous system, right? Like I just had tremendous anxiety. And it really helped to rewire everything and shift my, I could suddenly feel pleasure in my sensations and not feel like what happens with trauma is the wires for excitement and anxiety get crossed. And so anytime there was an increase in sensation, like I get good news about getting an artist in residency and my whole system would go into a panic.
Wow.
So yeah, that's.
And so was this in your early 20s when you found Stacey and started working with her?
Yes, I was 24. Mm-hmm. And I am 48 now, which is crazy.
Happens to all of us.
Like that.
A half a lifetime ago.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy to think about that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool, yeah. So I did that. And then I ended up going to school to become a psychotherapist because I wanted to work with, so I was trained as a master somatic coach at the Strozzi Institute. And I was interested in working with teenagers and doing embodied sexuality and working with families. And because I was working with touch and sex and wanted to work with youth, someone suggested I become more legitimate and get licensed, and also for like writing and publishing and things like that.
Right.
And so I became a reluctant therapist. Okay. I'm glad I did that training as well, though. And I went to the California Institute for Integral Studies.
CIIS. Yeah, that's where I got my doctorate. Cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you in the Bay as well?
I'm in Santa Cruz. So okay. I got my doctorate in Chinese medicine there.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So did you ever get to work with teens and really go down that road?
Oh, yes, I did. When I was in grad school, when you're doing your training hours, you pick an internship, and I created a site. Nothing existed to work with teenagers, which was really weird since we need teen hours, right? Or kid hours. Mm. So there was a school called Holden High School. And so I went and I found out about the school. I created a site. And so that's where I did my training. And what I discovered was, as much as I created a embodied sexuality class that I taught there as well. I didn't like working with parents who couldn't respect boundaries.
Mm. Wow.
And so certain borderline or mentally ill parents kind of ruined that for me. Cause I was like, I was seeing clients in my, or teens in my private practice after that. Mm-hmm. And a couple parents just made me go, nope, I'm moving away from this. I really need you.
Can you say a little bit more about what that behavior was? Because I think it'd be really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Especially
yeah.
for your parent listening to kind of, hey, what not to do. And that might seem obvious once you tell us, kind of what that was like.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. Well, when a kid needs to feel safe in talking to you and needs to feel like, that there's a relationship that you're building and that there's, that you're not going to be going back and tattling.
Yeah.
And less
confidentiality and trust in that.
Exactly. And ironically, this one parent who was a therapy, I don't know if she was an intern or if she was a therapist, but she wouldn't respect that. So basically being threatening. So there was a way that she would be jealous if her daughter had connections with other adults.
Right.
And And she would insist on certain things, and she kept calling me. So she was crossing my boundaries around the agreements that we had initially established. And I basically said to her, I was like, you need to respect these agreements that we've established in advance, or I can't keep working with your kid. And it was heartbreaking because her kid really liked me, but was like, she does this. She ruins any connection. Thing. So she's very afraid of her own, of being abandoned by her kid, and wanted to have complete control over her kid.
Interesting.
But unless a kid is hurting themselves, unless they are, you know, physically harming themselves or harming someone else, there really needs to be confidentiality.
Right.
So, even if they're sex and drugs and things like that, like unless they're...
Especially a teen who's coming into adulthood, it's training for adulthood, right? It's like, we've got to respect each other's privacy and boundaries.
Absolutely.
When you start doing that as a teen with the teenager, then they get it and they understand that's how it works.
Right.
Well, there's such fodder there for just that mother wound of smother mother and that feeling of the parents' insecurities coming in and controlling this ability to learn how to trust others, to build intimate, healthy relationships with other. I mean, it's so foundational. And so when a parent's own issues and insecurities robs them of that.
Yes.
It was so painful for everyone.
It was really heartbreaking. And, you know, I mean, just to be specific, and I know that some of these terms can get overused, but, you know, certain telltale signs, this is what the value of becoming a psychotherapist was like, you know, 3,000 hours of training in seeing so many people and getting to know like, oh, this is what is meant by, and I didn't like the idea of diagnoses before that, but there is some value in being able to identify for a client. You may want to read this book about borderline mothers. Like,
yeah.
You know, this is what's going on. You are not a bad human. You deserve to, right. You know, to have respect, to have your boundaries respected. You get to have needs, you know, you get to have privacy. And so this mom, I believe, was borderline. And there's a lot of anxiety in that case around abandonment.
Sure.
And so that was what was getting activated for her. And also total disrespect for boundaries and rage. She was blowing up at me when I would try to set boundaries, which was also really inappropriate.
Yeah.
And as a therapist, she should have known, like, look, you know how confidentiality works. Right. So those are some explicit signs.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like you had some early childhood sexual trauma in your own life that kind of set you on this path.
Let's take a quick break.
Hey guys, what would it be like if you could last 10 times longer when you're having sex?
We are going to teach you how to gain massive confidence as a lover, all without performance anxiety, gimmicks, or prescription.
This course is perfect for you if you've ever been mortified by a sexual encounter that ended way too early.
Or if you've ever avoided intimacy out of fear that you won't last as long as your lover desires. Or maybe you long to give your partner multiple orgasms, but can't last long enough to make that a reality.
Well, good news, we've got your back, and it's in our course, Last 10 Times Longer. Go to sexreimagined.com/last-10x-longer.
And for all of our favorite listeners out there, we are giving you a discount, 20% off, y'all. Just put in podcast20, all caps, podcast20. To get your 20% off of this phenomenal course that you're going to want to review more than once.
The link is in the show notes. We cannot wait to see you inside this course. Plus, don't forget, we always got tons of bonuses. See you there.
Yeah. And I would say, trauma started for me in utero. My mom was a heroin addict, and then I was born 2.5 months premature. And so it's such an interesting thing, like that preverbal trauma leaves a certain imprint that can also be even more intense than, but there was, if you know about the ACE study,
no.
Adverse. Mm. Oh, this is a really valuable, important thing.
Tell us about that.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, please.
So Kaiser started it, and I believe Stanford picked it up after that, but basically it stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. And it's a list of questions, that, you know, what they were discovering as they were focusing on physical health was that there were themes and there were certain adverse childhood experiences that kept reappearing. Child sexual abuse was one of them, but it could be like a parent in prison, witnessing domestic violence, you know, homelessness, like all these things, right? And the higher your score is, then the more likely you are to have chronic physical health issues, right? They were making a correlation, right? Autoimmune and, you know, stress in the body, stress.
Early on in life, yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't learn about the ACE study until I was in grad school. And I scored like a 9 out of 10.
Wow.
Overachiever. Wow. And it made a lot of sense, right? Like certain physical health issues started for me. There was sexual abuse starting at 4, but I had a stepfather who entered my life at 10. Mm. And I had chronic health issues from that point on. Yeah. And there was, you know, physical violence in the house and sexual abuse. Mm. And so, and I think it's important to name this because it wasn't until later that I discovered this as an adult. And I was training with an organization called Generation 5, which is a nonprofit committed to ending child sexual abuse within 5 generations and doing community response projects to educate folks, bystanders, that the way sexual abuse is defined is it's not, you know, just like your genitals are touched or you're raped or, you know, it's there can be exposure, like really inappropriate talk and exposure to sexual things or oral sex. Or there are certain things that as a kid, it was so yucky and normalized. There were certain things that were occurring that I didn't even have the language as a teenager to say, like, those things were also sexual abuse.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like every time my stepfather would taunt me and say mean things till I would kind of punch him and he's a 280-pound man and I was a 110-pound kid, then he would pinch my breasts.
That's sexual abuse. Yeah.
How is that appropriate? And that was just like a norm. That was just like a thing, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Or commenting on your body or asking if your friend that you're going to bring camping has big tits. I mean, like yucky stuff that
doesn't feel good. There are sensations that arise in the body around that kind of behavior that are sending signals of alert.
Yeah.
To the nervous system and signals of to brace and to like navigate and endure, not even navigate. It's really endure all this discomfort and sensation that's running through the body and to not even know the words, the language, who to go to, all these layers. It's so complex. I think people who have not had that kind of journey or have been exposed to some of that inappropriate stuff, they don't even realize the layer upon layer upon layer that starts to affect the system. And then how did that translate for you coming of age and being sexual yourself?
Oh, right. Yeah, totally. And I think that, you know, that's important and well said. Even just saying those words, I could feel my throat and chest get tighter and my heart start to beat faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Me too.
I feel the trauma response. Yeah.
And so what that is, it's like, even though I'm speaking now, what it looked like was, hardening. There was a, I'm not affected by you, motherfucker. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear. Yeah,
of course.
that developed, that was automatic for me. There was a hardness to my physical tissue. My whole tissue was like, you know, like an M&M where it's like hard or a crab or something.
Yeah.
You'd think I'm fluid and then you touch my body and my muscles were like rocks.
Rigid.
Wow.
And so, cause there was so much defense in my fascia. It took me a long time, a lot of somatic work to unfreeze, all through adolescence. Even though I would say things that were really sexually inappropriate, because it was so normalized in my family, I had a sexual aversion. So if I was ever in a sexual situation as a teenager, I would just I would freeze and dissociate and lose my, I couldn't. So one thing, yeah. So what's important that I don't think people get is that it's not when a freeze happens, your vocal cords also freeze. And so you may have thoughts, but you literally can't get the words to come out. Mm-hmm. And so when people say, like, why didn't you say no? It's the most infuriating
thing.
Right.
But you can't say no. Your whole nervous system is shut down.
Yeah.
And so at what time in your life did you start to kind of unravel that somatic shell, that hardness?
Yeah. So in my, I guess I was 20 or 21, I started working with an EMDR therapist, and it was very subtle. It was actually the best EMDR work that I've done, because other things I think have actually, it can be re-traumatizing for people's nervous system if it's not done well.
Interesting.
I was also dating a woman, but I was able to start to feel pleasure. I also had to intellectually explore. I was reading Carol Queen's book, a book on exhibitionism for the shy and Real Live Nude Girl, which were books from, you know, it's like, I don't know, the early 90s. Mm-hmm. So I had to intellectually think about sexuality. Mm-hmm. And I came out when I was 15, and I would still find myself sometimes in situations with boys or crushes, but I didn't feel safe being attracted to them. So I really denied my attraction to men. Mm-hmm. But I would even dissociate with women as well.
Sure.
But I think that the EMDR started to help. And then I did something called authentic movement, which I think also helped some. And so I could start to feel pleasure and start to have like orgasms with my girlfriend when I was 21. And then I still had a hard time. I would still freeze. And it wasn't until I was working with Stacy and doing somatic body work and doing these Aikido based practices, which literally help you move through, take action, like move towards somebody or have them move towards you, and learning how to ground in my body. And that helped to start to thaw out that freeze.
Wow, cool.
And so without that, you know, I was kind of like, you feel like you're stuck inside yourself, like you're watching things happen.
You can't access the outer world. And there's a place inside of you that's like not totally online as well.
Right. Your choice. Mm-hmm. Even working at Good Vibrations, I actually think was an important part of the thawing out process. Because when it started, I would freeze as customers would come towards me and touch me. Like there's an intimacy because they're talking to you about their sex life. And then suddenly they're like, arm is around your waist. And you're like,
yikes.
Right. Well, you know, they're looking for something that you're not necessarily wanting to give.
Well, is there also like a desire to want to speak quietly so you have to get close? Or do you feel like it's someone's actually really trying to cop a feel, or was it a mix?
Oh, absolutely both. Right. Okay. There are people. I was such an innocent young thing. Like, you know, there's a guy who once called and he was basically saying, you know, I have a stump. I had penis cancer. How can I have sex? Like what? You know what I mean? And here I am like being like, oh, this poor guy had penis cancer. And what can, well, you could get a strap on. And he's like, tell me about that. And those were wanker calls. And I just had no idea. You know, or they would do like, you know, physically inappropriate things with their mouths or, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was propositioned. I mean, there's definitely people that were there for nefarious reasons. And then there are other people that are just shy and you can feel the difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How long did it take for you to like feel like you got your street smarts for knowing those distinctions working in a sex toy store?
Let's take a quick break.
Ladies, do you want to explore your sexuality and experience true sexual healing?
The Vaginal Orgasms Masterclass teaches you and your partners how to unlock your full sexual potential and awaken the G-spot, the sacred spot, and the cervix for an unforgettable sexual experience. Would learning how to finally surrender and release grief, fear, and uncertainty benefit your outlook on life, love, and relationships? We certainly think so. Common misconceptions of the G-spot, including its anatomy and function as an erogenous zone, will be covered in this course.
Plus, we're going to teach you 7 different massage strokes for the G-spot that dissolve blocked energy and increase your pleasure tenfold.
We're going to teach you how to locate the sacred spot and the best methods to stimulate it for maximum pleasure.
And you're going to learn about cervical orgasm techniques, which are the most powerful and also often elusive style of climaxing. You know, this class is primarily geared toward women, but men have taken it as well and learned so much about how to pleasure their partners.
So get ready for multiple O's, my friends. And you can get all of that at sexreimagined.com/female-masterclass. And for being a listener of the show, we've got a beautiful coupon code for you. It is 20% off this course. Just type in podcast20, that's all caps, podcast20, and get yourself a great deal on this on-demand course.
Well, I needed to also, I was doing all this somatic therapy and training at the same time. So who knows what would have occurred if I hadn't had that to thaw that out. And so it went from, you know, someone touching me without, without being able to say anything, to me then starting to have more rigid boundaries where I was like, I need you to take a step back. Like I would have to call it out. Then they'd get literally self-conscious and then they'd like step back. To I would see their arm coming towards me and they would go to like want to touch my neck, less, or they were going to touch me in some way, and I would just step out of the way. Uh-huh. So my boundaries, I call, like, went from being rigid to compassionate and a lot more grace in how I could take care of myself versus being like, don't touch me, you know?
Wow, that's really beautiful. That's really beautiful.
Actually. It was very cool.
Because no one really talks about that much when we're talking about boundaries is like this distinction between rigid boundaries versus compassionate boundaries. Can you say more about that? It's really interesting.
Well, I think of it as, so when you have embodied boundaries, right? So as a teenager, I was like a brick wall. Like I remember I was making out with a boy when I was 14. Before we kissed, I said, let's get 2 things straight. I'm not your girlfriend and you're not going to fuck me. Mm. And he was like, okay. And then,
But now we can make out.
Right.
Now that we've got that straight, I think I did that kind of thing too up front. I was always just like, check it out. Yeah. Here's how it's going to be, you know? And it's a self-preservation, I think, for a young woman to just kind of like, let me lay it on the line. It's just one way, you know, it's one way of going about it.
Well, it's hard, right? Because, you know, if you don't do that, it can go so south.
Right.
And it so often does. There's so many people who wouldn't necessarily say like, oh, I was sexually abused at home, but then they have all of these traumatic experiences as a young girl where they wanted to be liked. They didn't want to be mean, you know, and they froze up and didn't advocate for what felt good to them because they don't know what feels good to them.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so I think that when you don't have embodied boundaries, there are some people who really know how to say no, but they don't know how to say yes. Right. So I was in that category. Mm-hmm. It was
another
like
great distinction.
Like no to everything. And the no comes out like no. Mm-hmm. It's like frantic. And it's like, if I don't shout at you,
you won't hear me.
Yes. And, you know, it's funny. I had a guy I dated for a month and he came on super strong. Like people would call it love bombing, but I think that's an overused term. But like super, you know, romancing. And I already. I knew from the first date, I was like, there's something like I don't fully trust this, you know? And then a month in, he broke up with me, which I was like on that fence waiting. I was like, oh, but his dick is so good. Like, do I want to sit? You know, I was like, how long can I be with this thing that's not emotionally fulfilling? But like, I'm not totally ready to stop. Yeah. But so it was so funny because when he called, I was like, how are you? And he's like, oh. Not good. And he's like, you know, I just have to call it. Like he was so aggressive in how he was, it was like, okay. You know, and he's like, there's nothing bad I can say. I mean, you know, you're great. But it was like, I was just listening to how, he's like, I just don't know how to do this. I'm not good at this. And I'm like, okay. Like that is not embodied boundary. right there. Like he needed to be, he sounded irritated. He was kind of grumpy, aggressive, when it could have gone really differently, you know? And that was, it was really too bad because I was like, we have all the same interests. We could be friends, you know, we could go to concerts together. Like, I don't
totally cut this off. So if he had done that in a compassionate boundaried way, what would that have sounded like?
Oh, he could have been like, you know, I've really enjoyed the ways we've connected. As I said, I don't feel emotionally available for something deeper than seeing someone periodically. And I know I may have come off really strong initially, but what my life is about right now is taking care of myself and, you know, doing activities solo. And, you know, but if you want to go to a concert once in a while, and if that's something you're open to, I would love that.
Yeah.
You know, like
totally different. Are you in the Bay Area?
I am. I'm in Oakland. Okay. I've loved the guests that I've had on my podcast, and I've been like, I need to have a big party in my garden and invite all the people.
Yeah. You do really feel like you make a connection, and then you want to stay connected. There's some cool people in this industry, and it's such a joy and a delight to hear all these great stories.
You create, because you're like, oh my God, the level of authenticity and rawness that would happen in a room with a bunch of people who are open in different ways.
And, in this realm,
super fun. And then there's a level of intimacy, right? I mean, as a therapist, you build intimacy very quickly, and then, you know, you get to continue it. And it's a very weird experience to do it just once, right? It's like sitting on an airplane. You're like, for like 8 hours, and then you never see the person again.
totally. It's very, that's a good example of that. So you started to transition, right? You were mostly sexually connected with women during a number of years, and then because you didn't feel safe with men. And then at some point during your therapeutic process, it sounds like that changed and you became more comfortable being sexual with men. Yes.
It's pretty funny, actually. It's so at the Strozzi Institute, the way that it used to be structured is one course was 8 months long, and you'd go for 3 days, and you would have something called a commitment. They asked you to, like, what are you committed to? It's like coaching language. And so the first year, it was about creating an embodied sexuality program for families. That was my commitment. The second year, as I'd healed more and felt safer in the world and been in a community with men and, you know, didn't shrink away from them, it was to have sex with men. And what that meant to me was something profound and deep. It wasn't just about getting off, but it was like I'd had such a sexual aversion and so much shame because I thought if I wanted to have sex with men, it meant I wanted the abuse to happen.
Wow.
It's like people would not think that. It's not logical.
That's similar. Mm-hmm. That's like what you were talking about, that where the wires get crossed between the excitement, the pleasure, and the trauma, right? Is that what was happening?
Yeah. Even when I would have crushes on boys in high school, if a boy looked at me and was like, just making eye contact, there would be terror that flooded my system, which I can now look back and go, oh, I was turned on, or I was like getting excited, but I didn't know how to feel it. It was just any increase in sensation created anxiety for me.
Gotcha.
You know, I have to say, like, I did not go through the sexual abuse and trauma as a child, but I can still relate to what you're talking about. You know, just like having that attention from boys and getting excited and not knowing what to do with it and not feeling like it's trying to take something from me. And I don't know what to do with that as a young girl.
Well, and I think what's so important about that, and this is actually so before I had a podcast, I was writing a book and it's still getting chipped away at. But the thesis of that is pretty much redefining what sexual trauma is, right? So we often think, okay, you're raped or there's child sexual abuse. But the way that I think about it is that You could be a person of color in America. You could have a mentally ill parent or a drug addicted parent. There are all these situations where your safety is compromised, and how a level of vigilance in your body, you have to squeeze down to not be visible. And so how does, if you're constricting your life force to be appropriate or acceptable in a variety of ways or safe, how can that not impact your sexual self-expression?
Right.
Yes.
Right. And so that's where, you know, it's not sexual abuse necessarily or sexual assault, but there is sexual trauma.
Right.
Because how you feel, how you express your sexuality, how you live in your body and allow yourself to feel pleasure or have needs or articulate yourself, like, it's not, you know, in one part of your life, it gets translated into your sex life as well.
Right. Yeah.
And you're, yeah.
Every part
and you're,
of your life.
Totally. Totally. It, yeah. We're sex is a microcosm.
Right. Of the entire life experience.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's another thing that people overly compartmentalize, is that, you know, there's sex and then there's everything else. And not realizing that, no, there's sex and it's in everything
and
else.
In everything.
I mean, from the way we are created to how we feel about our bodies, to how we feel about our personal agency to make choices in
our life. Choices that we make,
To how we end up picking careers, to how we choose to have children or not. I mean, there's all these different elements where our sexuality, due to the fact that it's also connected to our life force energy and our and our ability to feel filled with vitality. And it just, it affects so many other sectors of our life that I don't think we talk enough about. And build the relationship to when you feel healthy sexually, how that helps you feel healthy about all these different places that are alive for you in this lifetime being a human being. And we can't separate out sex. And that doesn't mean you should feel obligated to have sex just because sexuality is threaded through everything. You can make the choice to have a happy, beautiful life being celibate. You don't actually have to engage sex, but to honor sex and sexuality and sexual energy as this life force energy that's created, connected to our ability to be creative in the world.
Yes.
In the way that we raise our kids or we pursue our hobbies or we cook. I mean, it's just, it's really part of being vital. And yet there's so much choice around it. And I think so many people feel like they have to compartmentalize it and then feel powerless around it.
Yeah.
Or feel like they have to be a certain way when that's not necessarily a true authentic expression. And I'm kind of curious, due to your work, you know, for people that haven't had an unhealthy association to sexuality, who have been fortunate enough not to experience sexual abuse or be overly affected by sexual trauma, and they're dating someone or they're in love with someone or they've been married to someone for decades who has, what advice, how do you help that person navigate partnership and love?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And you know, there are certain books I would definitely recommend that. So Healing Sex is the new title to the Survivor's Guide to Sex. And eventually when my book is out in the world, it's going to be a little more gender neutral, even though Healing Sex focuses more on women. I think I've had male clients who were partners of people who were sexually abused find a lot of use in that book. There's a lot of somatic practices, learning about boundaries. We all need that. Learning about how to ask for what you want. We all need that. So it's a sex positive approach to healing sexual trauma. And so educating yourself so that your partner doesn't have to, reading books about trauma, understanding how the nervous system works. Come in for a single session if you're not doing couples therapy to get educated by your partner's trauma therapist.
I would highly recommend that, to process your own feelings.
Yeah.
If sex has to be off the table for a while.
Oh, yeah.
As someone is navigating that, like being able to be unedited in a confidential space where you can feel all your unfair feelings about having to be patient, of having to go slower, of having to respect a time of celibacy or whatever the case may be.
And then there's partners too who they don't know for sure if their partner's been sexually abused, but they have a hunch.
Yeah.
It's very
common.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
it's so common. And honestly, there are so many men that, so if we're talking about a straight couple and it's not always the woman, there's plenty of men who have experienced sexual trauma.
So many that we don't even realize.
Yeah. It's just not reported.
It's a whole other conversation we need to bring to the table. Yeah.
It's a really important conversation. And so, you know, when someone has a low libido or sexually is shut down, one of the things, and you mentioned it, which is super important, is not just avoiding sex and not having it, but consciously taking it off the table for a period where it's understood. This is the agreement. Mm-hmm. So that the person who feels less safe starts to understand that their boundaries are going to be respected. And it's not just sex. It could be, I've had clients who don't want to be, they don't want their person to sit next to them too close on the couch. They don't want to sleep in the same bed. They don't want kisses or touch. I mean, like, there needs to be, it's negotiated between that particular couple.
Right.
But, so it asks a tremendous amount of patience on the person's part who doesn't understand that. And maybe physical contact is their love language. And that's really hard.
Yeah.
And so there's lots of conversations. One, though, having your own therapist where you can process your needs not getting met. And how can you get those, how can you get micro needs met? How can you still connect? How can you still experience pleasure together, even if it's not sexual pleasure and connection? And how do you negotiate that? And there are going to be hard periods. And also, honestly, sometimes it's like, okay, so there might be a moment where you go, this is unsustainable for me. And can we discuss opening this relationship?
Right.
And that's a real hard one for some people.
It really confronts all sorts of layers, right? It's like the fear of abandonment, the feelings of rejection, the feelings of like, well, when can we have normal sexual connection again, or even affection again, if touch is off the table? You know, it's, and I want to give the audience members who are listening to this and maybe finding themselves in a similar circumstance to have a lot of hope. Mm-hmm. This is not a sentence. This is not a death sentence to sex. And it's not a death sentence if you're the one who has had this kind of trauma to think that you can never have the kind of sex you want.
Yeah.
There is an end to the rainbow, but it's a journey. And to be mindful that you don't get too goal oriented.
I think that's another thing that I think people can start to open up their minds to, is to reimagine what sexuality is. Like, let's go to the beach and feel the air on our skin and the water running over our skin together, and like frolic and play. Like, really, sexuality is like playfulness, right? This is our adult sandbox. And if we can start to have playfulness and fun together, we can just start to bring more joy and not take it all so seriously. But it does feel like it can take a long time when you put the sexuality on pause to heal trauma, and there's no like, okay, in 3 months, you know, we're gonna this is gonna shift. It you can be like, you know, in 3 months let's revisit and see where we're at, but
it's
you don't know how
journey.
Long it's gonna take. Yeah
There's a lot in what you said. And, you know, it's one of the things that came out of working at Good Vibrations that had me open towards men was men would come in with erectile issues or desires that were outside of the box. Like, they were straight men feeling so threatened because they wanted something in their butt, you know?
Yeah, right.
But when you're penis doesn't work the way you think it should, and you have to, and I'm like, yay, this is an opportunity to understand how fingers work and how mouths work, and, you know, and redefining what sex is, that it's not so PIV centric and penis and vagina, you know, centered. And but we're talking, like, you know, taking a step even further back from that, which, again, it's, you know, you were talking like ecosexual, right? Like, how do you make love? How do you make love to a tree? How do you find pleasure in other ways? And that asks a lot of people, if they're very straight, to step outside And I liked earlier that you used finger quotes to be like normal, because yeah.
What's let's, normal?
Yeah, exactly.
What is normal?
Like,
yeah.
Like, and normal's not even great. I mean, who really wants yeah. to be normal in this day and age? Yeah.
Well, and that's, I mean, you know, and you know, in the Bay Area, it's, I joke that you can throw an egg corn and hit a therapist and someone in a polyamorous relationship. Like, it's
right. That's know, hilarious. So true. Too.
Like, it's just so, it's so there that it's like, well, but, you know, whatever your attachment style is, like, you may need to navigate who and how many people you're committed to. But, yeah, the intimacy thing and the patience thing, and I, you know, for some people, it may mean that they, if your partner is has had sexual trauma that they're aware of, and they're not interested in working on it and healing it, you need to really consider, if that's a huge priority to you, what you need to do, because you can't force someone to be interested in sex or in addressing that part of a connection. And, you know, it's very different if the person who's like, okay, I have sexual trauma and I want to have a pleasure-filled relationship to my body and to the world. That's a very different motivation.
Yeah. And I think also redefining what intimacy is, because I think mm-hmm. people hear the word mm-hmm. intimacy and they immediately go sexual intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And we just did an episode back at the end of November. Talking about the just 12 different types of intimacy other than sexual. And when you can see that there are ways to connect with your lover or a friend or family, or even in the office, mm-hmm. ways of building trust and intimacy, which allows for authentic vulnerability, which deepens yeah. trust, which leads to presence. All these things that you can do outside the bedroom only make when you choose to navigate intimacy sexually that much richer. So yeah. learning about these different areas of intimacy, I think, is so valuable, because it prepares you while you're on the break, where you don't have to be in the fight or flight response because you're propelling yourself into a sexual environment, or even into just having touch that you don't like, that you get to finally say no to so that you can eventually say yes to. But yes. you can't get to the yes, that's for real, until you really hear that no, and that no is honored by you and honored by other. I mean, I just think having other places to build connection mm-hmm. while you're doing this work can be so helpful for the partnership in terms of being in it long distance and seeing it to tremendous transformation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It and, you know, I say that a lot to my clients. It's until you have, and I've experienced this myself, right? Until you have an embodied no, you can't have an authentic yes. It's because the yes often for, especially women, but plenty of men, is there's a default.
Right.
It's mm-hmm. like, oh, I'm just going to please. I want to be liked. I'm just going to say yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or I'm just going to constantly hang out in that middle zone of maybe, and I'm never really, I don't know what I really want, and I don't know what I don't want. And
I've come across yes. so many men who are like, I don't know if I can trust women. Because they don't, I don't trust if their yes is authentic. They don't know. I haven't experienced a woman who's had an authentic yes yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what makes it even more complicated, right, is if you get into parts work, right, if you're looking at, okay, so there's a 5-year-old part of me
right.
that doesn't want to be sexual yet. And then there's a 45-year-old part of me that really wants to have sex with you and wants to rip your clothes off. And,
right.
and then how do you listen as a partner who wants to be respectful and respect boundaries? That's a really tricky one. How do you attune to all parts of your partner?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And how does your partner attune to all parts of her
of
or
themselves.
Him yeah. of themselves,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's where yeah. skills come in. That's where you come in, Chyna, right? You got to learn these things. So when clients come to you to work with you, like what is sort of, I guess, maybe like what's one of the main sort of genres of clientele that you work with? Do you work more with women who've been through sexual abuse? Or are you working with men who are trying to deal with women who've been through sexual abuse? Or is it a big spectrum?
All of the above. All of the above. And, you know, it's always an interesting thing as a practitioner. You can track themes. Often they're, you know, at a certain point, I noticed that they'd be like this reflection of me. It's like, like maybe more extreme in each client that would come in, that come in threes, and they might reflect something that's going on in my life, you know?
Totally.
I have an equal amount of male and female clients. I have periods where I'm working with more couples versus individuals.
What are some of the like primary things that you tend to give people? Like for me, I'm always like, what's your essence? Like, let's get in touch with that first. You know, what are some of the first things that you give people?
Well, definitely. I mean, I love working on embodied boundaries with people, because it can be so liberating for them. And there's an immediate, like, I used to run an embodied sexuality group for women years ago. And I remember doing a group exercise and then with boundaries, and we had our hands on the back of this woman's back, and she said she felt like they were like angel wings. And then she left there and had some kind of harassment on the BART, you know, and she texted the group. She was like, "I've had angel wings came in handy." Like, she's like, "I felt safe. I felt, you know."
Wow.
Beautiful.
And it's a pretty remarkable, you know, versus talking about something when you simply have a concept and you can't take a new action, but she could physically feel a new experience in her body having left the session. Yeah.
She had embodied knowledge at that point that goes into your cells. It's way different than in your head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Way different.
Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, I do body work and I do these physical practices and I do guided meditations and visualizations. And I work in a variety of ways. And helping people. I also do a lot of psychoeducation around trauma. So helping people understand their nervous system and is a really important thing also, because there's a lot less judgment that happens when you're like, oh, this is hyperarousal, an increase in sensation. This is hypoarousal, a decrease in sensation. And when I suddenly find myself falling asleep in a hard conversation, I'm hypoaroused.
Right.
There's so much anxiety. My system is calming itself. A computer shutting, you know, down.
Yes. Yes.
So good to understand that about yourself, right?
Yeah.
Right. Or like, oh, what are the things? So help starting to track those things. Mm-hmm. How can I start to notice when I'm going outside my window of capacity to be with this emotion or sensation? What are the things that trigger me? What are the things that calm me?
And
starting to introduce people to those kinds of options, you know, so that they can try to catch things before they escalate. It's much harder once you've left that window to reground yourself. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's just a reminder to all of you listening that the statistics are so high regarding people who have had experiences with sexual harm in one form or another that you will encounter in on the path of love, you know, people who have been hurt in this way. And so us educating ourselves as a culture, as caring human beings, a part of this human family experience, it's important that we have these kinds of conversations, that we normalize these conversations, and that we're there for each other, and that we remain curious. And help us really shift these statistics, hopefully in a way, you know, that we can start to eradicate the sexual harm that is so prevalent, especially towards young people. And that's not from a place of creating fear, but really creating hope. And so I really want to thank you today for being on the show and sharing your work and the studies and the healing that you've done for your own life and for so many others. And your information will be in the show notes. So please take a look at her incredible stuff. She's doing amazing work out there. You've got online courses that'll be launching soon and sounds like a book. And we'd love to have you back on the show.
Thank you so much. You're lovely. I've really enjoyed the range of questions that you've talked about. And I look forward to having you on my show and getting to continue our conversation.
Awesome.
And I'll just mention that if you want to listen to my podcast, which you lovelies will be on, it's called Laid Open Podcast.
Great.
And you can find me at either charnacassell.com or passionate teenlife.org.
Awesome. Beautiful. Is there one last thing, one last little thread of wisdom that you would love to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that's such a huge resource that often gets neglected is awareness of the pelvic floor. And we learn about it as like in Mula Bandha or learning how to strengthen it if you have a baby and you're Kegeling, you know, but really using it as a tool for managing anxiety and actually starting to introduce yourself to more ground or pleasure. Being able to breathe out. So for anyone, we all have pelvic floors, right? For male-bodied humans,
I say, breathe
out your asshole, breathe out your vulva, you know, and
relax your ass.
Yeah, because I used to, when I worked at Good Vibrations, there was a guy I worked with who'd get pissed off and he'd be like, I'll be in the back. Like he'd get pissed at a customer and be like, I'll be in the back, breathe out my asshole.
I love it.
That's great. That's great.
And it really shifts your mood and your state. And, you know, and it takes sometimes if we're dissociated from our bodies and we don't live lower in our body, we don't even know what our pelvic floor is. But it's the muscles around your genitals and anus. And if you bear down as if you're making a bowel movement or you pull up as if you're stopping the flow of urine, but just let it be soft rather than too intense.
Right.
And just breathe there. And it's hard to have a tight jaw, right? It just drops your energy lower in your body. And if that one thing became a daily practice, you might see a difference in your day.
Mm. Yeah, that is so true. So everybody, remember to breathe
and relax
your
asshole.
Yes. And because there's sphincter muscles in multiple parts of the body, the eyes, the mouth, the throat, the vaginal canal, there are, if you can relax one sphincter muscle, it helps relax the other sphincter muscles.
Yes.
And I love this idea of like breathing through your butt or breathing through your vagina and just allowing the breath to actually come from that place so that the exhale can then like really drop away from that place.
You're really softening those lower chakras, which allows all the upper chakras to fly higher.
And who wants to be a tight ass? There's not a lot of fun in a tight ass. We don't have whippy asses.
Yes, yes, yes. Not too loose. I teased them. I was like, Don't poop your pants, everybody. Yes. But, you know,
Yes, it's good to have strong pelvic floor muscles, but also hyper-relaxed
floor
muscles.
That's a great.
We have so much tension for a lot of people.
That's great.
So, God, we should do another episode on just pelvic floor muscles because it is a fascinating
seed planted.
Thing. Yes. It's the path to sexual mastery. It's all in your pelvic floor, friends.
Yeah.
So with that, we will bid you farewell. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And love.
Now, our favorite part. The dish.
Ready to dish it out on Little Miss Charna Castell. I loved her. I thought she was just so, I don't know, I just want to hang out with her. I want to be her new best
friend. She was great. Really enjoyed her company. And, you know, there were these moments off camera. I don't remember how much of it wove into the interview, but we really giggled quite
a lot.
She's actually very fun.
She's super
And this is like intense subject material. So I don't know how humorous it was during the actual interview, but like out of interview, real delight. She's a character. She's super fun. What a great therapist.
God, and what a journey she has been on throughout her life. And like what a testament she is to the reality that like no matter what you've been through in your childhood, growing up, like, that you can come to a healthy relationship with your own sexuality and actually enjoy it and start to open up boxes around your sexuality that you didn't even know existed. I just thought she was a gem.
Well, and I think, too, she brought so many, I think, intricate, specific details that are a part of the sexual healing journey from trauma. You know, the things that really stuck out to me was the rigid, like the armor, the plate of, and then sort of the shrill no, mm-hmm. when you're in that hypervigilant and the confusion between, like, you're actually in a state of arousal. And I'm not right. saying that that means your clitoris is filled with blood. It might be. But like aroused states is really like when energy is rushing through the body. And the confusion between that and like desire and fear, because yeah. they're like two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. And just bringing, you know, I love the piece around like compassionate boundaries.
Yeah.
Versus what was the distinction?
It was like hard boundaries or yeah, disembodied.
Like, disembodied. Or rigid boundaries. It's like when you yeah. get really rigid with boundaries versus like compassionate boundaries and how the whole Aikido piece wove in the softening cool. of the boundary because you can step out of the way.
Yeah.
And yet there's also power in having your words and making people aware that they're actually crossing energetic boundaries. I think right. both are very valuable. But when you start to play with mastery, there's a way for you to be in your most comfortable boundaried world where it doesn't have to produce conflict. It actually, you can be connected to it from a place of flow. And I think that's often the essence of Aikido. It's like, right. here comes a yang yeah. attack, but it's actually the yin that deflects it.
That deflects it.
Yeah. And I love the parallels of that.
Yeah. And how fun for her when she was learning it and starting to embody it and starting to really gain these skills in her soma. Like how fun for her to be working at Good Vibrations in San Francisco on Haight Street. I don't know. I'm guessing
which one?
It was on Haight Street, you know, yeah. I don't know. But yeah, just all the characters I'm sure that would come in there. Just what a great sandbox to be playing with those new skills that she was gaining at that time.
Yeah. 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 So really fun, really cool and mm-hmm. really important conversation. It really brought to life for me the need for us to talk about, male sexual wounding and abuse and, you know, bring that to the table in terms of having a conversation, because the focus when talking about sexual trauma very much seems to be centered on girls and women much of the time. Mm-hmm. But what goes really undiscussed and unexplored is all the boys and men that have been harmed sexually and yeah. the impact that has on them and the secrecy that still is shrouded in that. Yeah. And this sort of way that we hold that is if it's not as harmful to them as it is to girls, from this place, I think, of where we over-sexualize boys.
Right.
Or we've so normalized their desires that it ends up minimizing the impact of trauma when it happens to them. And I think there's still so much secrecy around that in a way that, you know, could just use some evolutional change.
Conversation. Yeah. yeah. And new light shed on it for sure. I mean, there's so much shame in general around sexual trauma, sexual abuse for anyone of any gender. But I think, yeah, for boys and men, especially they'll yeah. go a lifetime and never talk about it.
So please reach out to us on our SpeakPipe hotline or just email us at support@sexreimagined.com. Please let us know of sexperts you would like to see on the show, whether they specialize in sexual trauma or various sexual subcategories or different authors. We'd love to get your favorite people on the show where we can continue to have a diverse conversation about reimagining this beautiful world of sexuality with y'all.
Much love.
Much love. Toodaloo.
Thanks for tuning in. This episode was hosted by Tantric Sex Master Coach and Positive Psychology Facilitator, Leah Piper, as well as by Chinese and Functional Medicine Doctor and Taoist Sexology Teacher, Dr. Willow Brown. Don't forget, your comments, likes, subscribes, and suggestions matter. Let's realize this new world together.
It's time for us to get love right, folks. And so we invite you to check out the King and Queen of Hearts.
This is an incredible training for couples who are struggling in unsatisfying sex lives.
It's also for lifelong learners, people whose relationship is great and they want to make it even better.
In this three-part training that is filled with 8 different tutorials like the art of tantric kissing, eye gazing that is deep and intimate, connective and not creepy, and sacred sexual meditations, you do them with your lover to juice you up before sex. Communication tips and really, really valuable relationship essentials are all found in this training.
You know, a common mistake couples make is they wait, they put it off, they avoid, they resist. And if you want to continue doing that, well, good luck. But if you really want to make a change, get this today. Don't let another month go by where you're losing precious connection with your partner.
Plus, you can't beat the price on this program. One of our clients, Casey, said a spark in their intimacy is back on track.
Now, Sarah and her husband, you know what she told us, Willow? She said, finally, he learned how to kiss her right.
Oh my God, hallelujah. So happy for Sarah.
So if you want some radical changes in your love life, go to sexreimagined.com, click on courses, and scroll until you find the King and Queen of Hearts. And because you are a fan of the podcast, you can use the King and Queen 10 code in order to get 10% off. That is King and Queen 10, and you can use it in the checkout.